You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. So in this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Maureen Pound, and we talk about being a single parent and dating. Maureen shares with us the season of her life, the story of a season of her life, when she realized that she wanted to make a change about this part of her life, and then what she did to make that happen. There's a lot more to it than that, but you got to listen to hear it. So one of the things I love about this experience and this conversation is that Maureen and I are basically on opposite sides of the world from each other, but we were still able to connect, have this terrific conversation, and share it with you. In fact, it's morning as I recorded this where I live, and it's the middle of the night where she is. So I just, special thanks to Maureen for making this happen and this amazing conversation. So are you ready? I'm definitely ready. You're going to love it. Let's go. Maureen Pound, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I certainly am.
I am excited to have this conversation. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I begin almost all of my interviews by asking my guests what part of the world they call home. Where are you these days?
I'm in Melbourne, Australia.
I love that. Australia is on my list of places that I hope to travel in my life, but I have not yet been there. And so I love that. It's also a very big time difference between you and me. And so thank you very much for accommodating the difference. It's amazing that you stayed up late. All right. So in a second, we're going to get started on this official interview topic. But first, let me ask you, what is something that you do to take care of yourself that you would describe as self-care that you're willing to share with us?
I run marathons.
Oh, me too. All right. Very good. Actually, they want it over the, I'm about to be an empty nester very soon, and I want to do the Abbott Majors that I haven't already run. So I've run New York. I was going to run Chicago, but it got COVID-ed. And they just added Sydney as a major. And so that's on my dream list to come and run that marathon. What's your favorite marathon?
Gold Coast in Australia.
Okay. Very nice. I will look that one up.
Yeah, it's very, it's a narrowish course. And so there's people everywhere cheering you on the whole way. I'm really slow, so it's good to have people still there cheering.
Yes. No, it's absolutely, absolutely good to pick a course. That's the reason I like the big city races, because there is the crowd. I've done races where there was less crowd. I can do it. But if you're out there for the experience and the fun day, it's a great thing to have people. It's nothing quite like having total strangers cheering you on, I got to say. So it's a good feeling. I recommend it to everybody. Yeah. All right. Now, topic of the day, not marathons, actually. So the topic of the day is that you were busy raising your kids, having your family, and you woke up one day and you realized that you had not had sex for 7 years. These are your words, yay. And you decided that you wanted to change that. And I love the way you phrased that. I can imagine the mental talk. I'd like to change this. I'm super ready for this conversation. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I want to start with the question. Can you tell us how many kids do you have?
So I have two kids, and I was in my late 30s, and I thought I'd meet a nice bloke, and I, you know, dated a bit, but I didn't meet anyone. So I didn't want to miss out the experience of having children. I'm one of nine myself, the youngest. And so I had two children by anonymous sperm donor starting at 40. The first one was due on my 40th birthday. And so then I spent years happily mothering, blissfully exhausted.
Yep.
And then, you know, we mentioned the marathons. I like keeping fit. I'm an entrepreneur as well. There was a charity event in Thailand where you would cycle 500 kilometers in 5 days with all these other entrepreneurs. And I did that. And the kids were, you know, quite reasonably young still, but I went without them and did this cycling, and I had guys looking at me again or noticing me, and I'm like, oh, that was the wake up. It was like, oh, this is quite nice. I forgot what this felt like. So, so I, de- I declared then and then, there and then on that bike ride, to the guys that I was going to go home and get laid. Yay.
Okay, absolutely. Okay, so that's very good. Cycling in the States is very it's not uncommon that a girl would be there's not as many women who do it in the group. So if you have a big group of cyclists, at least in the United States, you might have 50 to 100 riders that are men. 10 or 15 of them are going to be women, unless it's a women's only cycling event. Is it pretty similar in Thailand and Australia?
Yeah, generally is, especially for the hardcore cyclists. As this was more of a business group, it was mixed. There's still more men than women. And it was just nice. And I'm not saying they were hitting on me or anything like that. They were nice guys who just flirted and were friendly and, a couple of them noticed me. You know what I mean? It's
Yes,
like,
I
oh, you
do.
get
I
that male
do.
energy.
I do. It's you become when you do the shift from not having small children around and then having small children, a lot of attention goes to the kids, in my experience. You can walk into a room, an adult woman with two small children or a stroller, and all the attention is on the kids, and you kind of become invisible. And then if your focus in as a person is also on building the home and making the experience for the kids, all of your priority is outward focused, and then there's not as much focus on you or who's paying attention to you. And then when you notice that somebody's paying attention to you, it can be like, oh wow, I forgot about that. I forgot about that. So let's go back to talking about your intentional family planning, because I think that's a fun conversation to have. So you're one of nine kids. So would you say that you always knew that you wanted to have a family and be a mom?
But my mother was a little bit ahead of her time. So, firstly, she was very Catholic and didn't really intend to have a big family, but that's just what Catholics do. And so she had six girls, and I think somewhere, look, she loved her children. She used to joke and say, I never thought I'd mother a nation. But she also wanted us to be well educated and travel the world and, have lots of experiences. So a lot of young girls grow up with their mothers going, oh, you need to find a nice man and, you need to focus on that. Where she was not, we never even talked about that. We did not talk about that. It was the opposite. It was, when are you going to travel? What countries? What are you going to do? And so what happened is I merrily went on my way, traveling the world, studying, joining corporate, starting my business, all sorts of, awesome stuff. And my friends weren't like that. They'd gotten married at, 21 and started families. So when I hit my mid-30s, because I just always wanted children, but I didn't really logically think, okay, well, you need to find a man and you need to settle down and, the steps. I didn't think the steps through. So when I hit the mid-30s, then I'm like, oh, like I need to, that clock is ticking. So then I went madly dating a whole lot of guys, and and some lasted 4 or 6 months or whatever, but wasn't quite right. And there's a lot of pressure at that stage in your life. So I think women also behave a certain way when their clock's ticking. And really nice people, but it just wasn't working. So then I took myself off to South America and had no internet and no phone for a month to just sort of just go, am I really going to do this without a partner? This is a really big step. And I came back and decided that I would. So then it all happened pretty quickly. Once I'd made the decision, I found a donor. In Australia, there's very few donors. It's very regulated, one of the most regulated places in the world. So it's not that stereotypical, oh, they get paid money and they, college students do it. It's not like that. There's very few donors. So I was very lucky to find a donor and have two amazing children.
That is a fantastic story. What were your, so you put a lot of thought into this and actually took yourself out of the rat race to make sure you focused on it. What were some of the, if you remember from back then, what were some of your concerns at looking forward to single parenting? What were some of the things that you were unsure of?
So, just the first things that came to mind, judgment from others, and those closest to me, and my mum, amazing person, but like she was quite elderly at that stage and took a bit to get her head around it. And what am I going to tell the women at golf, So there was the judgment. There's the practicalities. And how is it going to work? How am I going to support them financially? I
Okay.
remember having lots of discussions with one of my sisters, like the decision making. I'm going to make all these decisions on my own. It's going to be hard. And she just laughed at me and said, I'm happily married, but it's hard making decisions with a partner, let me tell you.
I was going to say, and it's there's two sides to that, right? Like it's hard making decisions with somebody else. Compromise is really tough. And then there's a lot of people who feel like they are solo within a marriage. So even though you're partnered up because people are overextended and one person is not around as much, then you've got people who are like, I feel like I'm doing it all by myself anyway. Whether or not it's true or just perception, that's up to the family. Don't know. So I appreciate you sharing that with us because that is an interesting thing. So did you get some pushback? You mentioned that your mom, it took her a little while to come around to it. Was there anything
Yeah,
else that you got pushback from?
and I say these. This is how I remember it, and it maybe she didn't say it, but I remember the day that I was walking around these gardens, and I'd made the decision, and I rang my mum. She was the first person, and I said, "Look, I've just decided that I'm going to have children on my own." And she's like, "Oh, right." And I knew she was like, "But she goes, but what about find a husband or a?" I said, "You never know. I might meet someone after I've had the baby or whatever." And she just goes, "Oh, who'd want you and a little baby?"
Thanks, Mom.
And I was just her thought process at the time. So, and then interestingly, you get pushback from like a really close school friend, and to this day, she doesn't really agree with what I've done. But it doesn't mean that she doesn't still like me or love me or, is not there for me. But there's that. Yeah, she just it's just against what she believes. She believes that every child, needs a father as well. But the thing is, talk about that some people doing it alone. The irony is that when I had the baby, I had two really good friends living with me who stayed for a couple of years, and one of them was my best friend. She's amazing with children. And she was an amazing support person.
So you were not alone, is really what you're saying. You,
Wasn't really
yeah,
alone.
no, that is actually spectacular. You worked and created, and I think that that's really a, I think that's a really, really helpful point. I'm glad you thought to mention that because we can have this idea of the way a family is supposed to look, like put that in quotation marks, and if we're not careful, we can let that interfere with how happy we allow ourselves to be when life doesn't turn out, however that is. And so, if you back up and just say, I give myself permission to create the life I want, and whatever it looks like, I think that that can really be a freeing, really being a freeing thing. And so, you created your village. You likely had more support than many people who were in a more traditional, old-fashioned style relationship. Very well done, Maureen.
And the thing is, what there's one element that was missing, and again, it's not an exact science, but she always said to me, and she says to me to this day, I'll help you on my terms, so you can never expect anything of me. And I think that was a really good thing to say. But so she was always good if, the baby's crying or whatever. She was magical, like get the baby to sleep and just help out and really practical support. Like even to this day, so she lived with me for 12 years and moved out when I think my youngest was around 5, and still very, very close. And she to this day comes around 2 weeks before Mother's Day, takes the children shopping.
Oh,
And
very
they're
nice.
teenagers now, so that she can organize the presents for me. So, and then my birthday's coming up, so she'll do it again. She'll take them shopping, and organize beautiful gifts for me for my birthday. Like,
oh, what an angel. Oh my goodness, that's
she
fantastic.
truly is.
That is really fantastic. All right, so very good. So, being a single parent, right, is tough, right? It's one of the most classically tough situations, right? And so you were a single parent, you came to the realization that you were not having sex. The comparison I want to draw here is that this is actually, the research is that this is actually pretty common in married couples when you have young kids. I don't know how, like, exactly how old the kids were when this age, in the States we call this a dead bedroom sometimes. Those are the words that go to that, right? All right.
Right,
So,
never heard of that one.
okay. So yeah, that's a phrase that sometimes, a dead bedroom, which, can be there. And, little kids take a lot of energy. Raising little kids take a lot of energy. So there's no judgment when I talk about this. So you're at the cycling event. You realize that this is going on in your life. You are know that you want to make a change. You tell the guys, like, I'm going home and changing this. What's the first thing that you decide to do to make this change in your life, to bring more intimacy and sex into your life?
Well, just to add to the story, I didn't even just tell the guys. I got on a stage and told everyone.
Oh my goodness. All right, so like this is like a business seminar and you're presenting on a stage and you make an announcement.
So we're all there for different reasons. We're raising money for charity for orphans, and on the last night, you get on stage and you say why you came. And there was one guy had lost 120 pounds, and another person had suffered abuse as a child, and like there's really hard hitting stuff. And so I was the second last person. I'm like, what am I going to say? So I got up there and said, look, I've been focusing on my children for all these years, and I want to focus on myself. And so I declared to everybody that I was going to get laid. So in answer to your question, what happened next was a few of the guys came up to me after this, and they said, look, like, so in disbelief first, like, how could someone do that?
I was going to say, what was the reaction from some of them that you probably knew some of the people in the room quite well, and some were strangers?
Some
So,
not.
yeah.
And then one of them, he was quite practical, and he said, you just need to get on a dating app. And I'm like, oh, the last time I was on a dating thing, it was the RSVP, and it was very clunky and a long process. He goes, no, jump on Tinder. So he actually got it out. He was really practical, and he goes, this is how you do it. These are my matches. It's pretty straightforward. So I said, okay. And then another one of the guys, he's really fun. He said, hey, Maureen, when you get back in our group chat, when you get the deed done, just put a tick. That's
The little
all.
check mark. Put a little check mark.
So then I'm like, oh my gosh, like, he goes, you're a high achiever. Come on, you can do it. I'm like, okay. So that was then, okay, I've declared it. I've got practical tips of how to do it. I got back. I was feeling really good. Got my hair cut and got my hair done. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll just take a selfie. And I just took one photo. I put it on the app, put a few lines in my bio. And also, because I hadn't been on these apps before, I didn't know if I'd get any matches.
Yeah.
Am I going to be rejected? Like, there was all that sort of stuff. And so, for such a confident person, I felt very vulnerable in the beginning.
I think that makes sense, actually. It's I think that's really common. I have a very funny, I don't know if it's Bumble or Tinder. So my single days were really before the apps, to tell you the truth. Like, so I met people the old-fashioned way at work and bars and social events. But then in my 30s, I had younger friends who were on the apps. And maybe it's the cycling that reminds me of this story, but we were before a ride and I was with some of my friends and they were younger. And one of the people handed me her phone because she was talking about being single and being on the apps. I didn't know about the swiping and the this and then that. And her screen was kind of cracked and I was trying to see it. And I don't remember exactly what I but on somebody's picture, I did something. She's like, oh my gosh, why did you do that? And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. You handed me your phone. She's like, you like super like this person. Now they think I'm super in. I was like, you all handed an older person an app that I have no idea how to use. Like, this is on you, kid. This is on you. But it is the way we do things. But I think that, yeah, I mean, it is interesting that you would feel confident to stand up in a room of peers and make the announcement, and then the nerves would kick in when you put yourself onto the app. That's an interesting part of this story.
And then I also I think we all have our hang-ups from our past. I remember when I was about 16 and hanging out with, we went to the Catholic girls' school and there was the local Catholic boys' school and we're in this Italian restaurant for lunch and must have been the end of term or something. And the boys came in and they rated us as they walked past
Oh, goodness.
out of 10, you know, and so the 6.5 was still ringing in my head, you know,
Ah,
30 years later.
brutal.
And I'm just like, oh, so those sorts of things come up for you around. And then also hanging out with girls at school, my friends, a couple of them were really, really traditionally beautiful. And so they got all the attention as well. So there was all that stuff going on for me in the background, around it. And it's funny that I thought I'd put all that to bed, and then it came up when I got on a silly app, you know?
Yeah, that is interesting. That is very interesting. So you create your profile, you put yourself out there. This is something you have to learn how to do on your own. Like it's a totally new skill set. So, and you have some reservations. How did you figure it out? And what was your success? Did you find that it was a positive experience right out the gate being on the apps, or was there a learning curve, or how did it come together?
So it was a real positive experience because I got matches and I got interest. And at that point, because I think also you can change your mind around what you want on
Sure.
apps. You know, sometimes you go, okay, actually, I just want to get laid, or I want to have walking dates, or I want to get to know, you know, like what are adventures, like what do I want? And so in the beginning, I got some matches. And I actually got laid within 3 days. Like, it was my goal, tick.
You get, and did you go into the chat and put the tick back? Did you go into your group chat? And what was the response from the peanut gallery to that?
Oh, they were just so happy for me. Like, I'm still in the business group all these years, you know, later, and they still sometimes they still talk about it, you know. It's remembered. And then but then comes the roller coaster of online dating.
Okay.
Sometimes you feel hurt. Sometimes, even though I knew I didn't want a long, life-term partner, you still, the hormones kick in. You've been intimate with someone, and you know, so it's navigating all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
You're talking to someone and then they unmatch you. I don't even like the term ghosting because I think a lot of times my friend and I talk about it a lot. If you really have ownership of your own behavior, you might not have, you know, they might have sent you a few messages and then you haven't answered them for days and then they unmatch you and you go, oh my goodness, oh, he unmatched me, how dare he, you know?
Yeah.
And so you've got to own your own behavior as well. And then also the other thing I noticed is when you're feeling really powerful and happy and like nothing phases you and you get on the apps and you know and you behave a certain way. And when you're feeling a bit down or needy, then you behave a certain way yesterday, as well.
Sure.
Like yesterday, my friend, she was just going crazy. This guy had messaged her for 2 days and she's like, she wrote him, how dare you disrespect me and whatever. I'm just like, you're overreacting a little bit. And she's like, well, I've never left it 2 days with him. And I said, you have, you've told me.
Sure.
And she's like, oh, okay. So it's like, it's just for me, it was a bit of a roller coaster, but I accepted the roller coaster and I made sure that I. Because sometimes you want that dopamine hit of matching and whatever, but I try to get on when I'm feeling good.
And so just being aware of your mindset and your emotions when you put yourself in, when you're on the app. So your initial goal in going on Tinder was a physical connection, intimacy, a spontaneous, sort of a spontaneous relationship. I don't know if that's the right word. Did you ever, like, did you, at this point, you have kids, you're a parent, you've got a family. Has your intention sort of always stayed in that side? You're looking for companionship and connection, or did you ever sort of think to yourself, oh, you know, maybe something forever? Like where did your mind go with that over the years?
There was a couple of maybes sometimes where I'd go, oh, it would be nice, you
Yeah.
know, a little bit of fairy tale esque.
Yep.
But then reality always kicked in that my children are my priority and we have a really fantastic life. And I already had my village.
Yep.
And sometimes people, and I feel very fortunate for that, they try and get all the things in a partner, their adventure buddy, their lover, their companion, all those things, you know, the person to talk to when they're down, the person to talk to when they're happy. I've got that with all different people.
That is actually kind of brilliant when you phrase it like that. It's a lot of pressure to put that on one
On one person.
person. Yeah, that is actually really, really very smart. I like the way you mentioned that. So, one of the things, and this is just a very practical question. So, I find the season of my life where I had young kids, my youngest is about to turn 19. But the season of my life where I was spending a lot of time with young kids, which is when your kids were pretty young when you started this project, right? I had no energy for evening events. I would not have been. How did you manage the actual like dating and scheduling? Was that hard, or did you have a support team where you had babysitters and things like that? Like, what were the very practical things about managing your energy and your time to be able to include like social events, like dating and social events.
In the beginning, there were some like evening events, and I would drive the kids to another single mum friend, and the kids would play, and then I'd be gone for 3 hours, or you know, depending if I was going to dinner or I was just having some fun or whatever it was. But there weren't that many. So what ended up happening is because I have set my life up as an entrepreneur to do things my way. I have plenty of time during the day,
Okay.
so it didn't really. None of they the kids were at school by the time this all started happening, so a lot of them were like some morning delight.
Okay.
So it was more like you know, it, like I'd say I was a break in the day or whatever. And so, yeah, so I did it that way. And even my walking dates, I try to incorporate them into things that I already did. So if I'm going to go for a walk anyway, well, I'll have a walking date.
That is brilliant. 'Cause okay, so when I had young kids, there was this commercial on by MasterCard. It was this whole thing about this very romanticized couple, and they go to the opera and they have date night, right? And there's all that pressure when you're in a relationship, like it's like date night, date night. And I found it very frustrating, like, because if I went out late and had, you know, dinner and the opera and all these things, first of all, I found that the opera was very good for nap time for me. I know many, many people love opera and I think that it's beautiful, but I was sleep deprived. I had all these small children. And then it was like a losing proposition for me because I was exhausted the next day. And so, you know, I was like, I don't want to go out until 1 in the morning when my kids wake up at 5 in the morning. Like, I want to be in bed at 8:05, because then when, you know, like you say, like it was like the priority is the family and being able to enjoy the experience and those kind of things. So I love the idea of really structuring it into the schedule that works for your current life, which in this case was walking dates and daytime dates. And I think that that's spectacular. Okay, so you've mentioned that you were an entrepreneur. Part of this story is that you eventually at some point become a person who helps others manage and set up their dating profiles. I think that's how this goes. What was your are is that like is am I right about that, or am I wrong?
So what happened was when I went on this journey, I love interaction and communication. It's always been my jam. And so I started noticing patterns in guys and how they communicated. And sometimes I'd just go, they'd be a bit frustrated or whatever, and I go, can I give you a tip, you know, or, you know, and I became friends with some of them. And so I'd give them some tips and they go, oh, my God, that's brilliant. Thank you so much. Or another guy, I said, that was amazing the way you streamlined, got me off that app, you know, it was beautiful. And so tell me your formula.
Okay.
And he'd go, right, this is what I do. And he wrote it out for me. Like it was just as, and it, it might sound negative, but it wasn't. It was just clever and practical. And so I was just fascinated by all of this and how some people were so successful with dating apps and some weren't. And that the more guys I spoke to, the more I realized that they were after one thing, and the one thing is a relationship. Guys don't want to be alone forever. So even if they want to play around for a while, they eventually want a partner. So there's all this stuff that I'm like, oh, my goodness, like I really want to share what I've learned. And I also want to focus on men and help men.
Okay.
So I decided, I went to a, so I have a writing background, and I went to a book writing workshop just to get energy and hang around with authors. And we're in this room, there was about 14 of us, I think 12 women and 2 men, and you were pitching your ideas. And I'm like, okay, I could write a book about, you know, giving up drinking 22 years ago and how it changed my life. I could write a book about, you know, having anonymous sperm donor children. I could write a book about, you know, dating for men, you know, how to get laid on Tinder for men. And all the women are going, oh, we love the one about no drinking. We love the one about, you know, having children on your own. And then these 2 blokes at the back of the room are like, excuse me, the Tinder one, the Tinder one, you know, the dating for men one. And so I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. They were really quiet the whole day, but they had to have a say, you know, like that was a good idea. So I decided to write the book, and it was really hard and it took a long, long time. But I feel also that sometimes as women, we tell men what we don't want and what they do wrong and we get annoyed with them, but we forget to tell them exactly what we do want.
Sure.
So I just wanted to put it in a really positive, kind way that's really practical. So that's what I did.
So in the book, and the domain that you have is getting laid on Tinder.
How to get laid on Tinder.
Which is maybe the greatest title and domain that I've ever heard. How to get laid on Tinder. I absolutely love it. So there's a, you know, so this is a very provocative topic and a very in your face title. Not surprising for you, since this journey starts with you standing up in front of a room of peers and saying, this is my project. And so this is clearly a piece of your personality. So the book is written for men, or for women and men. So it's a book that's written for men, How to Get Laid on Tinder. Writing a book requires, you know, we write books so that other people can see them. Tell me a little bit about the feedback in the beginning of the process when you're like, so you get this initial positive feedback from the 2 guys in the back of the room. As you begin to tell people that you're writing a book called How to Get Laid on Tinder, what's the reaction you get from the title and the concept, and how are people responding to it? Do you tell your priest?
I did a lot. And then I got on more stages, of course, in my business group. And this time there were hundreds of people and I shared. So, like, the ultra conservative people, like, ho-ho, you know, they just, like that. I got this reaction from some women, but I want to be careful about it, because I think we tend to hold on to the negative reactions, even though it's predominantly positive. But I did have people say, as if men don't know how to get laid on Tinder. And what about women? The what about us? The what about us? So I got a little bit of that. And I just joke and said, if I wrote and called the book How to Communicate with Women, it would not sell as well as it's selling now, let me tell you.
Yeah.
So, and it is a lot of it. Sure, there's, you know, sexy bits in there. There's, you know, stuff on, you know, sexting and blowjobs and whatever. But it's all around communication around those things.
Okay.
So, the reaction was mainly positive. It's like, oh, a bit of shock. And just a little bit of, I think, women presuming that by saying that I'm helping men get laid, that they're going to treat women badly or something.
Okay, the connotation, like the inference.
Connotations of
Yep.
it,
Yep.
which I get, but I sort of wanted to own it. And then there's the, I did put it out. I remember putting it out the day I put it out on a Facebook post, and there was some pretty disparaging comments as well. Like, it's pretty full on.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's my family who just don't talk about it.
they just put their blinders on and they're like, we're not going to have the conversation about your book today, Maureen. Okay. I love that. All right. That's very, because that, you know, when we put something out there, it's so that other people can see it. But when you create something that is intentionally provocative for people to respond, you are going to get all the things. And I think that I've read about it a lot, that you can get 100 positive feedback things, you know, for anything you do, whether it's a speech or a book or an essay, and then you get the one negative comment, and for some reason that's the one that sticks, that's the one that we hear most of all. And so I think that is a good thing for you to point that out. It's like, be careful that you know I don't want to just all put up things on the negative comments. What's the
sorry, just on it though, just because then we did a podcast, we've got a podcast on it, and I happen to know that a lot of the listeners are women.
And what's the age range? Do you know how the age range of people who are older. So you skew older. Yeah. So this is for older people who are on. When we say older, what sort of, give me an estimate of how old you are.
So definitely
about.
Over 35.
Over 35. Okay.
Yeah. Mainly men. There's this pocket of men, a little bit like me, who've come out of long-term relationships, and like, I met my partner at college or in a bar or I don't know how to, and they're very practical and they're just like, just give me the book. Like, I don't even want to read the whole thing. I'll read the sections I need. Thank you very much.
That does seem, I'm usually a person who, I'm like against like gender differences and stereotypes. I'm like, you know, I think it's very more vague than that, but that is a pretty standard thing when you're talking to a very pragmatic group of gentlemen, shall we say. They're like, I just need the steps. Just give me the list. I'm going to do it. I don't want to. And then when you talk to more gentle, a lot of times a different group, you need to give a lot more explanation, like a lot more color, a lot more experience, and so on and so forth. So that's very interesting. All right. So you wrote a book, you have a podcast, and so now we're going to do the final questions in a minute, but I want to give you a chance to be very direct and tell the people who are listening how they can find the book, how they can find you, how you work with people today. Give us some of that information, and so that people know how to find you.
Sure. So it's How to Get Laid on Tinder.com. So everything is there. So you can buy the book on Amazon. You can buy old fashioned hard copy. There's the podcast, and there's also I'm having a mental blank. anyway, it'll come to me in a minute. Yes, but all the socials is on there. It's all under the same thing, How to Get Laid on Tinder.
How to Get Laid on Tinder. How long ago was it that you wrote the book?
A couple of years ago, but okay. I've updated it since. And obviously – it's, you know, it's also for Bumble or Hinge or the
that I was going to ask. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah. I've got a section on the different apps and which ones you choose. Most people actually are across a couple. When they're doing online dating, they usually go hard.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, there's all the different apps and all the different things. And it's, you know, we talk about it. So in the United States, there's currently a lot of pressure. People are looking for in-person connection. People, there's a conversation that's happening about loneliness and all kind of things. And the apps are a tool to meet people in real life. So I think that's very good. What is, before we go into the final questions, are you still on the apps? Are you still actively engaging and doing things on the apps, or are you?
No. I'm quite content.
You've moved off. You've taken your experience and you've moved off as an expert. What is this might be a terrible question. You may not have an answer, but what do you have, like, a, because you, it's a high volume of experience. Do you have like a sort of mental list of like sort of crazy encounters you've had? I don't mean crazy as in scary. I mean crazy as sort of entertaining, entertaining interactions with people via the app, or unexpected conversations, surprises that have happened as you've gone through these things.
Oh, so many. And Like one guy, a member of this exclusive, like it's the Melbourne Cricket Club, but we have this, it's almost like the Super Bowl. We
Okay.
have a football match each year. And he remembered I was a member, and he's like years later writing to me, seeing if I can get him tickets, and like just weird and wonderful things. I can't, like, there's situations like that, but a lot of it was just quite normal.
Okay. I think that that's reassuring for people who might be considering it. There's a couple of things I think that might be reassuring that you're talking about people who are in sort of a second, an older group that would be in establishing a relationship, and the reaffirming that people are quite normal. Because I think that there's a connotation of it being sort of crazy and unpleasant. All right,
Yeah, and
so.
it's, the Tinder swindler, all that stuff. Oh, there's so many fake profiles. And there are. If it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. If this,
Yes. Oh, so what was that? Okay, so there was a documentary last year, a couple of years ago, about the dating site for a fair Madison Reed,
Ashley Madison.
Ashley Madison. Madison Reed, I think, is a hair color. So Ashley Madison. So I the documentary was wildly entertaining. I don't know if you watched it. It was
Yeah, I
really
did watch it,
very.
yeah.
Yeah, really, really entertaining. And one of the things that they said about that is that there was a possibility that many of the profiles on the platform may not have been legitimate. And I don't know. It was an entertaining show. That's all I know. All right. Maureen, are you
Yep.
ready for the fun final questions?
Yes.
Let's do it. All right. What is something that people, not a specific person or anything like that, but just people in general. What is something that people in general can do that bugs you a little bit or grates on your nerves?
Not ask questions or show interest in others.
Not asking questions or showing interest. No, very nice answer. I can see that. I can see, especially since you're into communication. I think that that's a very, I think that's a great answer. All right.
Like it stops them getting many places in life and learning. I just anyway, yes.
All right, very good. All right, so as an author, I'll ask you, if you like books as a reader, and if you do, and how do you prefer to read, like a paper book, an e-reader, or are you a person who listens to audiobooks or all three?
Paper books, hands
Paper
down,
books.
forever. I'm addicted. I used to teach literature many years ago. I just, there's nothing like being able to hold a book in your hand. And when I go traveling, that's one of my guilty pleasures is at the airport, I choose three books to read on the plane.
Okay, so you go into the bookstore and you stock up and you do those books. That's it. That's pretty phenomenal. That's wonderful. That's a really good idea. All right, so if I came to visit you, and I said, I want to take you to lunch or dinner at your very favorite local restaurant, where would we go?
We would want, I live 2 kilometers from the city, so it's, it's restaurant central. So what we would do is I would take you walking along the streets, and then you would go by the vibe, whatever was feeling was inviting you in, and we'd go in there.
So spontaneous. Oh my gosh, that's so fun. That is such a fun answer. That's it, Maureen Pound. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you, Amy. I loved chatting with you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.